love being a part of this unique and amazing organism called Oak Street Church, so it's an honor to be here and hang out with you guys. I first wanted to thank John for deciding that we were going to talk about us as Jesus followers and our world or our environment. And so I appreciate that, because we don't always talk about that. We make the things around us, sometimes we kind of separate them, and they're the natural world, and then there's the spiritual world, but everything's spiritual, so I appreciate that. I appreciated Em's talk last week and her call to really receive the gift of creation to kind of renew us and beauty and in solitude. That was great. And I appreciated getting a chance to talk about something that sometimes I'm pretty passionate about, and but I'm not quite sure where I'm at with other people. So, hey, you'll get to know where I'm at with a lot of these things. So, I'm very grateful that my theology towards creation or this planet or this place we live has changed. You know, I think that when we're children, it's really fun to watch kids outside, because they just like come alive when they go outside, and they love playing in the outdoors. When, you know, my siblings and my neighbors, I had the luxury of having this giant woods near me, and we would play in the woods, find arrowheads, chase the neighbor's sheep, make trails, pick berries, and, you know, it didn't matter. We just make up all kinds of imaginative things to do in the woods. And, you know, it's kind of fun to see that natural connection with creation in kids. And I can remember so many times, even when I got older and got more concerned and self-conscious, thinking about being social as a teenager, and you kind of maybe lose a little bit of that wonder, I still remember encounters with God and with creation. I remember one time, I think my parents rented a place at the beach, and going out by myself on the beach at night, maybe I was 12 or 13, and the vastness and the mystery that the ocean represented just spoke to me volumes, and I remember this longing for God. So, I think we all can relate to those kinds of things where we have encounters with our natural world in really special ways. And I want to read Psalm 19, verses 1 through 4. I guess I could read it off of it. Okay, maybe I'll just do what Breck does and read it off the big board. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. In the heavens, he's pitched a tent for the sun. Well, I like to end on the ends of the world. That psalm meant so much to me, when I first started reading the Bible. And I think about that scripture and how creation, everything that God's made, everything that we see in our natural world, is the original way God revealed his nature to us. And he unites us in that with the rest of this, kind of almost like an extended family of creation. God is always revealing, always teaching us through creation. You know, just think about all the ways we describe even God. You know, because God's like mysterious and unknowable in some ways. So knowing him through creation is a way we kind of have a path towards him. So can you guys think of some ways we describe God that are connected with creation or with nature? Go ahead and shout them out if you do.
Jesus is a true vine.
True vine. It describes us, too. We get to be the branches. Anybody else? And we sang about a lot of stuff this morning and a lot of things. Thank you, Steve, for he's everlasting. Yeah. I think that things like the bright and morning star, because we read in Psalm 19 that the heavens declare as well as the earth. Mountain shaper and wind maker. Isn't that cool? We describe him as rock. Oh, Missy, did you have one? Or you anybody else? Craig. Yeah. Yeah, we had lots of songs about him being sovereign. Sometimes God's described as a farmer or a gardener. Jesus showed up and they thought he was the gardener. He's described as a shepherd. And the ultimate part of creation that God reveals himself in, he came like one of us. He came as a human, a created human being. So there's lots of ways that God, through creation, shows us how to relate to God and how to live. Teaches us about his nature. You know, I said something to somebody this morning about the birds talking to me, and I got a wee little eye roll. But then I got an amen, too. So, yes, birds have talked to me. They don't speak English, but in really cool ways. And trees are something that are super meaningful to me. I've had so many encounters with trees that have taught me beautiful lessons. Where Breck's family lives, they live up on a bluff above the ocean in Northern California. And I go for a walk, and there would be this row of these gnarled evergreen trees. I don't know if they were like spruce, cypress. And, you know, maybe in a forest they would have been kind of protected from the wind, but when they're a row like that, they had all kind of curved away from the wind and looked gnarled and ancient, and I kind of opened up to these trees and what they had to teach me, or what God had to teach me through them. And I felt like they were these like wise keepers that were teaching me about patience, about adaptability, as their branches kind of had to adapt to protect themselves. Maybe some of their branches have been broken off on the ocean side or the wind side. But it was this beautiful kind of revelation about who God was and who I am. And whenever I take that walk and see them again, it would be almost like greeting my old buddies who are my old teachers. So I love encountering creation in those kinds of ways. But back to being glad that my theology changed, I wanted to talk a little bit about what I call bad theology about creation. And tell a little story. When I came to Jesus deliberately as an adult, you know, I think he's with us all the time, but deliberately as an adult, I was I'm not quite 19 years old. And it was in this context of these kind of mostly young, hippie-style Jesus freak people. And they lived in community, lived in a commune. And I was drawn by their love towards me, their love for one another, and their kind of peaceful contentment. And so I joined them, and I moved in. And one of the first things I encounter, or not one of the first things, but somewhere along the line, you cook together, right? And so somehow we generated some trash. I don't know what it was, but I asked, like, what I thought, you know, a person who cares about this beauty and this wonder, I asked if they had recycling. And, you know, where could I put this thing? Just almost kind of presuming that that would be a thing they'd be into. And I got a shocking answer. This wonderful, sweet young lady turns to me and she said, "Why? It's all going to burn." And I don't know if you guys have ever heard that kind of bad theology, but I think that kind of seeps in. You know, we could talk for a long time, but there's not time this morning, so I won't, but about, you know, things that have influenced us as people, Western, you know, we're a part of Western civilization, part of Western Christianity, and the way those things seeped in. But at the time, I'm just going to give one little example of how that bad theology gets propagated, because I was kind of like just in shock, like, I don't understand God. I can't not see God everywhere I go in this beautiful, I was in Alaska, and I'd see the mountains, and I'd almost cry over their beauty and their wonder and how much they spoke to me about God. And so I just could not figure out how somebody could say this. There was a book going around called The Late Great Planet Earth, and I'm not blaming it all on this book. There was lots of things that influenced this kind of bad theology, but I kind of looked it up because I won't even mention the author, but it was a book that sold 90 million copies. So this hippie-like Jesus freak friend had been influenced by it, and was like, trash doesn't matter. It only matters, and there's all kinds of reasons that they gave to say, it only matters that you get your ticket to heaven and that you hang on, because God's going to destroy the earth, and it doesn't really matter what happens to it. I just want to say that that's a little piece. I had a lot of good theology, but that was a little piece of bad theology that I was kind of birthed into. And I want to expose it because I think sometimes there's little residuals of it. But thankfully, you know, I continued. I hate to say, but there was a part of me that bought into that. I didn't fight and start a recycling program in our little commune. We grew vegetables. There were other things. There were other avenues that maybe we were connecting and respecting creation. But in a lot of ways, I didn't fight that, and I bought in. But I continued to wrestle with this idea of us being caregivers and stewards and nurturers of the place that God had put us in. And I began to hear more and more about some of the, I mean, I could see for myself, but I also could, you hear stories about some of the scars and the abuses that were happening to our planet. And this conflict got greater, you know, because God was teaching me about how interdependent and how connected I was, not only with my fellow Jesus followers, but with all of humans and all of the beauty and wonder that I saw around me. I kind of was being confronted with, I mean, a good hippie thing was to be anti-materialistic, and we said it was kind of easy to give away everything because we didn't have much to start with because we were dumb young kids. But this idea also, there was some really good stuff about rejecting a strong materialistic worldview. And, you know, I started to be even more and more in conflict, especially as life went on, and the pressure to consume and to make money and to live in what really seems like a strong throwaway culture, where it's all about us and what we get and what we can use, and then we don't care what happens because of it. That I started to have more and more conflict with the things that I was learning about the kingdom of God. Sometimes, and this isn't like a chronological thing necessarily, although it more like an evolving, slow process, but I know sometimes as I, you know, act on or share my convictions, I find myself sometimes in conflict with others, and even in conflict with myself, because sometimes this call of God to be a good steward of our planet costs me something. And so when it costs me something, you know, when I have to pay a little bit more or work a little harder or give that thing up, you know, that creates conflict in me. And one of the things I want to talk about today, because I know that you guys, as navigators of this life, probably have somewhat of that struggle too. And I have to look, you know, I think sometimes when we look at struggle or we look at our potential to do good things, do things that benefit our earth, our world, we also have to look at the times where we do things that harm our world, and that we have potential to do both, just like we have potential to do both in all kinds of ways. But, you know, out of that, sometimes our natural response is because it feels uncomfortable to have a conflict or to have a struggle or to have a tension, because we don't like that. It's kind of our natural tendency. And we do things like we say the problem doesn't exist. We just deny it. Deny it. What, denial's the gift that keeps on giving. Have you ever heard that one? Another thing is that we can feel guilty and forlorn and be sad about things that are bad and harmful to our environment. But that doesn't produce anything. I don't want to live in guilt. I don't want to live in feeling bad. I don't want to just lament. I want to take action. So I think being willing, I'm going to talk about some things today, but I think we need to be willing to look at the things that we do have potential to both harm and to do good, that we have the ability to be at odds with God, or we have the ability to be co-creators and co-laborers with Him. I want to not be afraid of living in that tension, and I want to live in reality. So, and I think about this like, you know, we can all relate to people in our lives that we have relationships with people. We have relationships that are really close. My probably closest relationship is my husband, Breck. I'm not going to pick on him like he does me so many years. But if I'm doing something in my relationship with the person that's special to me and in my life, if I'm doing something that hurts them, sometimes I can claim ignorance, but as soon as that's kind of pointed out to me, if I continue to do that behavior that hurts or harms them, then it's almost like I step it up. It's almost like it becomes like willfully wrong or maybe even abusive. But if I open my eyes and I have empathy and I make efforts to change, then I end up, what I get is a healthy relationship and a deeper connection and communion with that person. And I really think it's the same when we think about our relationship with our planet. When you study about the natural world, it is amazingly complex and interdependent and, you know, fragile but beautifully held in all this amazing balance. And to me, it just, the more you learn about our natural world, the more you see God in it. I remember that as a college student and being blown away. Even at chemistry, you go down to the little stuff, and to me, it screamed of God. You go to the big stuff and look at the stars, and it screams of God. So I thought, where do I even start talking about this kind of stuff, creation care, and our role to be nurturers, and especially the area of harm that is happening to our world. And I landed on something. And you know what? And I promise, I want to talk about some big things, or one big thing, because, you know, you can't talk about all the big stuff. And I want to, but I promise you I will talk about small, everyday things that can fill us with hope and purpose and a clear path to being nurturers. So the thing I picked is plastic. You know, plastic's been around for a really short time. We humans created plastic in about the 1950s, and it's made our lives more convenient. It's used in food industry. It's used in tools, medical devices. The list goes on. You can't go. I mean, we're probably surrounded in this building right now by little forms of plastic in lots of different ways. Probably our chairs are synthetic, you know, made out of some kind of like form of it that doesn't decompose. So it does all this beautiful stuff, but the way we use it, we've done a lot of harm to our planet. I want to talk about one big thing. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but has anybody ever heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch? Oh, yeah. Way to go, you informed people. I love it. I probably heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch maybe a year or two ago, and it just made me want to cry. It was so sad because so much damage is done, and it didn't seem like there was any solution. And the damage was continuing to happen. But the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, for those of you that don't know, it's the largest of five of these patches in our world's oceans. It sits between Hawaii and California, so it's pretty close to us. It's twice the size of Texas. It has 80,000, if you just took out all the plastic, they estimate, and garbage, there's probably other things that are maybe not, but it's mostly plastic. If you took all the plastic out, no water, it'd weigh 80,000 tons. It has 1.8 trillion pieces of garbage just in that one patch. It's the biggest patch. That's 250 pieces for every human on the face of the earth. So those are pretty, that's pretty awful statistics. It swirls into a patch because of our ocean currents. And it's, you know, a huge part of it is from lost fishing gear, about 43%. And nets, and I don't, you guys probably have all seen pictures of, thought about doing a picture, but you probably have seen, they're really sad, they make me cry. Pictures of turtles or dolphins or whales entangled, and so that's a big part of the problem, but the rest is garbage that ships dump, that waste is dumped, you know, from the big culverts that just pour right into the ocean. We have water runoff systems that come from our cities into our rivers, and it eventually finds its way into the ocean because all the rivers go into the ocean. That's part of this beauty and wonder. We used to have garbage barges, so cities that lived near the coastline would just put their garbage on a barge and dump it. You know, positive news as Americans, we are now contributing a very small part to that garbage patch. And the countries of Asia, which are in development and look to the U.S. for technology and the American dream and, you know, increasing wealth, they're the great polluters right now because they don't have, they're developing nations and they don't have systems that can deal with the garbage like we do. We don't have infrastructures. Plastic never biodegrades. Never. It just gets into smaller and smaller pieces. So some people say, oh, it takes, you know, 500 to 1,000 years for plastic to degrade. But it degrades into tiny little pieces, not really. It doesn't become absorbable as a biomaterial, like some things that we use, like cotton. And it just becomes smaller and smaller and becomes even more damaging to our oceans and our soil. You know, there was a recent story that I read. I'd skim through the news and I'd go, God, there's so many stories about stuff that's happening in our world. So we really can't turn a blind eye. There was an autopsy. There was a beach whale in the Philippines, and they did an autopsy. They found 88 pounds of plastic in the whale. The whale died of starvation because it didn't have room for food. And it's estimated there's like 70% of all ocean life has some absorbed particles that of the chemicals that make up plastic. And that probably it's higher for us humans. and we're talking about tiny amounts, but, you know, that's a reality. We've like created this thing that gave us convenience, but did this terrible scar to our world. You know, there were some people who, you know, were inspired. They went diving, and they, instead of finding fish, they found floating plastic bags. And there's, you know, there's more than just one, but there's this one guy. We're talking about this, I told you I'd only talk about one big thing, but with his Great Pacific Garbage Patch, this guy from Holland, young, smart, an inventor, said, you know, we got to do something. And through technology, through gathering scientists and researchers and a vast group of volunteers and volunteer ships and tons of research, they have a plan. It's called the Ocean Cleanup. They have a plan that, and it's fascinating if you want to read about it. Maybe some of you guys have already. But they have a plan that if everything went right, they would use the ocean currents and solar power and because they said using nets and vessels, it would take 1,000 years to clean this up. And they could put a really big dent in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in 5 years. So while that seems like a horrible scar, it's still amazing, this role that we have as nurturers and carers. Here's this one guy and says, that's a terrible scar. I want to fix it. I want to be, I don't know what kind of spirituality he has, but he is used by God. When I read his story and these plans about the ocean cleanup, just as much as I cry when the first time I hear about the garbage patch, I cry for gratefulness that somebody wants to do something and join with God to reverse some of those, to be healers. So, So, we could, I'm going to transition to some smaller things, but for example, we could do this huge, amazing effort, but if we keep contributing, it's not going to fix the problem. So we need to, you know, our American technology gets transplanted all over the earth. You know, we created plastic, but we also have these amazing systems to recycle or deal with our trash or reverse things. And so if we can do that on a small scale, it gets exported, even to places that are maybe now worse polluters than the thing that we started. So I just want to say that there's really, you know, while there's great scarring, there still is great hope for healing. Okay, in our everyday realm, and I'm going to share some things. Emily touched on it last Sunday, and I'm going to share some things that are maybe about principles of things that we can bring into our lives to help be healers and to not scar so much, because we're consumers, right? We got to eat, we buy things, we got to do those things, but can we do it in a way that is co-working with God and not separate from God and how he looks on creation? So I know you guys probably have all kinds of tips and good stories. We're talking about encountering creation, you know, to find wonder and revival. But we also, there are little things that we can do that we can join with creation. So I'm going to talk about some of those things, but save your stories because you get to share. You get to be the people next time. I have a list. So there's no way we can talk about all this. You know, there's so many changes, but I made a little list of things that I'm incorporating in, and Breck and I are incorporating in our lives. So I've got a paper list, but if you would rather have it sent to email, because there's a lot of links. There's some links about really awesome stories about people taking barren, scarred places and making them into beautiful, restored, natural areas. And there's some short little films, and they're really cool. So I made links to those. So if you'd rather get your, just send me your, or sign up with your email, because I don't want to push anything that you don't want. But if you want to put your email on here, I'll send you this this in paper form. And so I'm going to pass that around. Here you go, Chris. And yeah. Okay. You know, one of the first things that I think we need to embrace, and we've talked about it a lot, but I don't want it to be ever seen as something outside or different of things that we can do to as healers. But I think the first thing that we need to do as we in our everyday, as we approach our responsibility as nurturers and stewards, is to spend time in nature. I don't care if it's a house plant or your pet, and that's indoors. but just that's part of nature, that's part of creation that can speak to us. I think it's not just good, it's like necessary for us to spend time in nature, in God's creation, and notice and meditate and share space with things that God's created, and to look deeply, not just identify. I know we've got a few birders around here, and it's awesome to say, oh, that's a black-headed grosbeak, woohoo, and make our list, and then they almost become competition. But to like let that black-headed grosbeak speak to you. I know I struggle, you know, so don't just identify, go deeper with creation. Let creation speak to you. You really can have birds speak to you. You can have trees speak to you, or beetles like John reveled in. You got to notice and spend some time. I love gardening, and I have a big yard. We have a big garden area, and I love growing food. It's kind of a passion. If you come up, I always tell you what I'm feeding you that came from my garden. Sorry, but I'm really excited about it. And but one of the things I have to really work on is when I go out into my yard and my garden, I have to work on having a Sabbath attitude and being present, and my work, and working on not like making a list in my head of all the things that need to get done, but losing myself in the work, and you know, almost losing sense of time is a really beautiful thing that we can experience in nature sometime. So. Another thing that I touched on that I want to talk about, an area that we can work on, is reversing our American throwaway culture. Recycling is great, but it's limited. I don't know if you know, but there's a lot of plastics that very little of it actually can get recycled back to be used for something else. So it's great. It's an option that we have. Scientists are working on making plastics that actually do biodegrade, and some of those are getting more available, but we as consumers are the ones that create the demand for that. It's better to not create the need to recycle by first reusing or reducing. So I know you guys have, well, I don't know. Has anybody ever seen Breck and I walking around with kombucha glass bottles? It's our water bottle. Because you know what? I bought this bottle, and it had kombucha in it regularly, but it's been filled up I don't know how many times, maybe hundreds of times, and it could be filled up for thousands more times. Usually what my barrier is that I lose it, I leave it somewhere. But and glass water bottles are awesome. But you know, you can take one that you already have, and it's a perfect size, and it sits in the fridge, and yeah. Okay, so that's a little example of doing that. You know, we have a finite planet, and God's plan may be to liberate it eventually and to renew it, not to burn it. So there's only so much of our stuff that's contained in this beautiful planet. So remember that as you're using it. Delight in how long your car, or your furniture, or your towels last with good care. Keep bags in your car for shopping. You know, and now they're starting to legislate this, but I have to keep them in the back seat. I used to keep them in the trunk, because then I get in the store and I go, I forgot my bags. So if I keep them in a really visible place, and then it kind of becomes a habit. You know, Ross IGA, shout out to them, because everybody knows about that. You can bring your own jar and buy bulk food. You don't have to use the new plastic thing. And you know what? You go up to the checker and you say, could I weigh my jar? Because I'm going to get something, or jars. And they go, yeah. And I mean, they might be a little confused and, you know, scramble, but they have always been so courteous to me and bent over backwards to let me use my own container. And I give them, not only am I giving them kudos and thanking them and shopping there, but I'm creating knowledge, I'm creating education, I'm creating a demand. And I think that's awesome. So that's something that you can do. You can use, you can get things wrapped in butcher paper when you buy them, instead of, you know, tons of styrofoam around them. You know, when I'm talking about in the meat department, things like, I know you guys have probably heard it, you don't have to drink out of a straw. You can actually just use your lips in a cup. Straws are doing horrible, horrible damage to our world. So think about those throwaway things. And if you have an option, you know, bring your spoon to lunch. Don't throw it away. And bring it back and wash it rather than using all those plastic ones. So one principle is to turn away from our throwaway culture. You can't do it totally, but you can try to put a good stab and effort at it. The next area that I think that's really good to think about is consuming with God's justice in mind. Some of the things that I so far I have not been able to give up are that come from faraway places and have been associated with all kinds of bad environmental and human abuse are coffee and chocolate. I love them. They're like, I feel like God made them to go together. And they're, you know, just a part of my life that right now I can't give up. And I'm not asking you guys to give up. But you can, you know, the coffee industry has a horrible history of going in and destroying the natural world in third world countries. Coffee and chocolate are only grown in places that are more tropical and where there is way, way more poverty than we experience in our country. Because we create the demand for it. So, there's an awesome example because, and then once your taste buds get used to good coffee, you want to pay a little bit more. I don't know about, you know, if somebody's still drinking Folgers, that's okay. Or Sanka. But knowing if your coffee is fair trade, if it doesn't have a fair trade stamp, that costs money. Sometimes coffee roasters are getting their coffee from people and they call it relationship coffee. They have a direct relationship with coffee growers and they are doing things with sustainable practices like shade grown, organic. So when you make your purchases, if you know that there's a lot of injustice behind some of those purchases, try to do better. Chocolate, Nestle's, thank goodness it's not an American company, but Nestle's has a horrendous history of slave labor and child labor and horrible abuses. I can't buy Nestle chocolate chips or things. And I'm not saying you're there or you're ready for that, but if you know about injustice, I personally don't want to be a part. I don't want to give money to things that keep the poor poor and make big corporations more powerful and more able to destroy the earth and hurt people with no repercussions. So when we create the demand, we are striking a blow against empire and we are saying yes to God's kingdom. You can tell I get a little passionate about it. Sorry. Another area is buying local. Why the heck should we buy local? Yeah. Often, yes, because that when you have to transport things from way, way far away. If I have a choice to buy something that comes from 100 miles away versus something 3,000 miles away, do it. That's a reason it puts back into local economies that we can control and that we can contribute. Breck and I have for quite a few years loved investing in young farmers that are living sacrificially to have a meaningful life of producing food or making items that don't harm the earth or harm the earth in very little small ways. And we try to encourage them and buy from them and participate as a part of a movement to really take care and nurture the earth. So that's just a simple one. But organic. We have a bazillion more choices now than we used to. But why? You know, some of the obvious things are you know, the more research and the more science goes behind this kind of stuff, there's some terrible things that happen when we pour pesticides and herbicides and fungicides on our earth. And especially to the most vulnerable, like children in utero or little ones. There's some amazing research coming out, and I say amazing because I hope we can change it, but that shows really higher if the higher the exposure, the higher incidences of ADD, autism, cancer, lower IQ. And these are things that last. These are things that cost us, not only cost that human being, but they cost all of us in so many ways. These substances didn't exist 50 to 100 years ago. So if you can, try to, you know, when you buy organic, you're not only limiting your exposure, but you're saying yes to that farmer who chooses to make a living by not having, by limiting, and there's limiting the damage. And you know, there's all kinds of technology that's coming out, and I know it's in its infancy, but technology for farmers about, you know, how to limit use of pesticides. So the more you create a demand for it, the more you help heal our planet. So it's bigger than I'm not eating the bad stuff. It's bigger than that. Sustainable is another word. You know, sustainable farming and landscaping, basically just means we're doing things that don't deplete our resources, our finite resources over the long term. And, you know, that can happen in your backyard. You can plant native plants that don't need as much water and know how to fight off the bugs that live in this area. And know how to give back to the birds and the bees and the pollinators and all those kinds of things. So I think bamboo is an awesome kind of new plant. They're finding things about bamboo. You can buy bamboo clothes, linens, toilet paper, toothbrushes. And, it comes to maturity in 4 years, which is really short compared to a tree. It doesn't require irrigation or fertilizer. And when you cut it down, you don't even have to replant or dig up the ground because it just sprouts up again. And I have this as a resource. This I purchased bamboo, but you can get 100% recycled. This is a company out of Australia, and half of their profits go to build toilets in places where people don't have sanitation. Anybody want to take one of these home? Lauren, raise your hand first. Okay, just sowing seeds. It's called, the company's called Who Gives a Crap? And it's on your list. Okay, so, and one last little thing of areas. You know, don't depend on government. We are revolutionaries. And we can change things. And we, you know, whether it's in your backyard or at the grocery store or wherever, we can change things. And I'm not saying that there aren't great laws that are happening and change is happening and that government can facilitate that. But when it comes down to it, most of the time, big corporations and the bottom line is what speaks the loudest or has the loudest voice. And we see that so much in how things run. And I just want you to, you know, we still have a voice. It's amazing. We live in a country where we have representative government and you get to say what you think. So you can keep urging and stuff like that, but don't depend on big government to change everything. As we go, because I know I've taken a lot of your time, but I'm not sure what that meant. I want to give all of us an invitation. I want this to be like an invitation to be aware to our interdependence and connectedness with creation, with the ebb and flow. You know, creation doesn't just give to us. It also takes. And we get to participate in that as created beings. God set it up that way. So be aware of this, you know, this ebb and flow, whether it be you recognize that in the food you eat, the beauty that you see, or the lessons you learn from God in creation. Be awake to hold the tension of how we participate in both scarring and healing of our planet. Try to keep your eyes open. It's easy to just say, oh, it's too big and too much, but try to be awake. Be active as caretakers, as stewards, as nurturers, as co-creators and co-healers with God, because that's our call. It's God, it gave us that role. And be alive. Let creation give to you and revive you. We need that. We need that to fuel us, and especially to hold that tension. So thank you, you guys. I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you in different ways next week. Lord, we come together as this body organism called Oak Street Church, and we ask that you give us special grace and wisdom to walk in this world as your stewards, as your caregivers. Give us wisdom in all kinds of new ways. And we ask this in the beautiful name of Jesus. Amen.
Can we throw something in real quick?
I don't know. Ask John, because it's 11:30.